Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome again to another Tech Talk here on RNIB Connect Radio and, of course, on the podcast as well. Hello to everyone. Robin Christofferson is with me, Stephen Scott. Once again, hello, Robin.
Hi, I'm really glad to be back again.
Yeah, you sounded... You can maybe try it again, but this time you mean it.
I'm really glad to be back.
We've also got Andy back with us on the emails.
I am really glad to be back as well, Stephen.
Oh, that's
nice. I have to say that. It's written in my script.
That's right, it's written there, isn't it? It's been big print for you as well. Okay, yeah, so we've got lots to talk about this week. We're going to be talking about the Blindshell mobile phone that's called the Blindshell Classic. I've got it over here. Hang on. Yeah, there it is. Never do live demos. We are going to be talking about it because this is a really nice little phone, which is very reminiscent of a phone I had years ago. I think we all probably had this at some point, the Nokia 3310. Mm-hmm. If you had the other phones, of course, like what was the Nokia 91 that had the N91 that had talks on
it? Yep. And the N93 had both of those.
And what were the N95, or am I dreaming that one?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That had it as well, didn't it? But yeah, so the kind of that style, as in it's got the T9 keyboard, actual physical buttons 1 to 9. I'm going to review it for you today. I did promise I would do this, so I am going to review it on the show today. I know you're excited, Robin, because you love all this stuff, don't you? You love basic tech.
Yes. I like accessible tech that is good for, you know, easy enough for everyone. I'm actually very interested about this for my mum, who has the in your pocket, but she's not really using much of it, and she's struggling a bit. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this demo.
I think this is a good phone. I'll tell you what this is good for us. If you go on holiday, say, to the beach, and you don't want to take your main phone with you because there's a chance you're going to drop it in the sand and never find it again. I mean, I could drop my phone in my house and never find it again. So, you know, I don't want to do it on the beach. So you can take with you this phone and, you know, it could be really good. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that today on the show. And we're also going to be checking in with Ask Tech Talk, checking the inbox to see what people have been asking this week. This week's question comes from one of our listeners in Northern Ireland who's asking Andy all about televisions,
yeah,
talking TVs,
EPGs. Yes, we'll get to that a bit later on.
Electronic program guide and all that loveliness of television. So yeah, that's coming up on the show today, but I think we need to kick off with the inbox, don't you? Yeah, I think it's time for emails.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Right, Andy, into the inbox we go.
Email from Tasif. Thank you ever so much for doing what you do. It's a fabulous show and podcast full of some wide-ranging topics and delivered in such a fun and informative way.
Well, we try.
Thanks, Tasif.
The CES conference that Stephen went to sounded really brilliant. Thanks for taking the time out to go and report back.
Well, I salute you, sir.
My query for you and other listeners is around burglar alarms and other similar home security. My first question relates to someone a colleague is working with. It is someone who is totally blind, lives alone, has no Wi-Fi or smartphone, and has no intention of having either. They were wondering if there is a burglar alarm system that might be available for them to use, i.e. uses Braille, etc. Mm-hmm. I've contacted the RNIB, I've contacted Cobalt Systems, and also checked out the website for the Research Institute for Disabled Consumers, which you recently mentioned on there. However, I've drawn a blank. I cannot find anything. The second query is linked to the above, but for myself. I am totally blind, but I do have Wi-Fi, and I use an iPhone. Are there systems out there which have built-in voice synthesizers, or where they are totally accessible with a phone app? I look forward to hearing from you and others in due course. All the best, Tosif.
Well, it's interesting because I often would recommend you go and speak to someone at Cobalt, because that would be the kind of natural place to go for this kind of thing. But burglar alarms that are accessible, that's an interesting one, Robin. What about you and your house? I don't know if we should ask this question, but do you have a burglar alarm?
Yes, but it's a fake one.
What?
When they built the extension, they said, hey, do you want us to put an ADT, which is a very common, you know, security company, box on the side of the extension. And I said, like a fake one, you mean? And he said, yeah, but what about a flashing light or something, you know? And he said, no, they don't have anything like that. It's literally just this plastic thing, which is looks like the box, the business, but no. So maybe he wants to do that. But
have you got the cardboard cutter of a policeman there as well?
Yeah, it's like no, we won't get there.
Sirens.
My in-laws have a proper burglar alarm, and to be honest, the only way they interface with it is with a keypad just inside the door. And once you know the layout of the keypad, you put in the pin to prime it before you go out, and when you come in, it starts beeping alarmingly until you quickly put in the code. You've got 30 seconds to do it before it contacts the company or the police or something, I don't know. But so I would say that that's accessible, but that's certainly not a cheap option.
No, well, so we got one put into our house, and I think that this might appeal to your his mum?
It was a colleague.
Colleague.
Yes, the first relates to someone who is a colleague who's working with you.
Yeah. Right, okay. So your colleague, I think this might be a good idea. The one we got put into our house is same idea. So it's got the keypad, and you can arm it with 4 digits, and it's not accessible. The screen isn't, you can't read any of it. That is a bit of a nuisance. But what it does have with it, which I think is brilliant, is a car-style key fob. So it's got a lock and unlock button, and there are 2 preset buttons that you can choose to perhaps arm a particular part of the house. Maybe you only want to arm downstairs, or you only want to arm the back of the house or the front of the house, whatever you choose upon setup. So you have this little keypad with 4 buttons on it. The top one, in my case, is the lock or the arm button for the whole house to sort of set the whole thing. And the one below that is to unlock the alarm, to turn off the alarm. A bit like cars have those key fobs to open and close the doors. Well, it's the same idea. And that is really good. If you're looking for something that's accessible, and you know, and I think the reason I'm thinking that's good is because it doesn't really rely on internet as such, although you can hook it up to systems like you were talking about there, Robin. You can get these systems where it contacts an office, and then the office make the decision to contact the police or registered key holders, all of that, right?
And we should say that doesn't require you to have Wi-Fi in your house for that to happen.
Well, I'm not sure about that. Does it not require? Does it just require a landline?
I think it's a radio signal.
I don't think that would work, would it? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how people's alarms work when they fall over and that sort of thing, when you press that button. But it depends on the frequency. It can travel miles and miles. I don't know is the real answer.
Well, I think it does. I think most of them do require an element of Wi-Fi nowadays, okay. Or at least a landline phone.
The modern ones.
Yeah.
Certainly my parent-in-law's one doesn't.
Right, okay. But this one that I've got does require it, and you have to sign up to a yearly subscription, and it's not a lot of money. It's like 20 quid a year. It's not a lot of money at all, but it does give you that security that if your alarm does go off, someone will be contacted. And also what I like is mine's a set up with my phone, and I can actually control it with my phone app. It's not the most accessible app in the world, my system, but once you get to know layouts, and that's often how it works when you're blind, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You kind of just have to figure it out sometimes. Then you can use the app to control it, disable it, and of course what's wonderful about it as well is it will tell you when the alarm is armed and disarmed on your phone. It'll give you notifications, and if the alarm goes off, it will send an alert straight to your phone. Have to say, it's a bit freaky when it does it, because it just shouts out very loudly, burglar alarm, burglar alarm, very unsubtly, which is not great, but at the same time, I suppose you do want to know, don't you? So I'd say that's good. So that's that kind of medium option of, you know, you can use it without Wi-Fi, you can use it without all that, you don't have to use all those extra features. I would say if you're looking for something that has got those extra features built in, if you do have Wi-Fi, and you're looking for an accessible alarm system, my first go-to point would be the new Ring alarm that's available from Amazon. It was only introduced late part of last year. It's now available in the UK. I think it's about £250 for the full set, which is a lot cheaper than a lot of these alarm systems can be. Mm-hmm. And it does have all of the functions to control remotely. And Ring and Amazon apps generally have had accessibility issues, but a lot of those are being sorted out. And you can even get cameras as well if you wanted to go further and perhaps have cameras outside your house. I think, is it the Blink XT2 cameras, Robin?
That's the weatherproof one, and they have versions that are indoors as well.
Yeah,
and they can be cameras, they can be light detectors, they can be motion sensors. They have a really good range. And because it's DIY and it's really easy to set up, it's going to be a fraction of the cost,
isn't it,
of getting a company in.
It depends on, you know, your ability, I guess, doesn't it? Because, you know, I got somebody in because I just wasn't comfortable doing that. It wasn't something I was going to manage to do. And I don't have people in my life. I'm so lonely. I don't have people to go to for this kind of thing because my family are useless with DIY and I wouldn't trust them within an inch of a screwdriver. But there are options out there for sure. Check those out. The Ring Alarm is available from Amazon. As I say, it's about £250 for the pack. I think you can get different levels of packs as well, mm-hmm. with different things inside, maybe extra features. I also think a combination of things, like the Ring doorbell is a good one. I don't know if you've got one of those, Robin.
No, but I definitely agree there. And you can get smart locks like the August lock, I think, has an accessible app for it. I don't know if Ring do a smart lock.
No, not at the moment, yeah. No.
And they all mix and match, and we're getting to a place where the compatibility across these different ecosystems is getting better.
Yeah.
So you can chop and change or shop and change. Yeah, give it a go.
My favourite one, actually, of the doorbell variety is the Nest doorbell, mm-hmm. because it has facial recognition on it, which I think is brilliant. It doesn't use AI. You have to program it in. But if you have regular people coming to your door, it will tell you who's at the door.
It warns you.
It warns you, yes. Mum is at the door.
Mother-in-law approaching. Yeah.
Alert.
I would argue that it does use AI to recognise faces once you've taught them. That's how it recognises the different facial elements. But absolutely, yeah, it doesn't kind of go out and source it from...
No, it's not going to do it itself. You have to teach it to some degree.
You have to teach it, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, hopefully that helps. You can let us know how you get on with that. Okay, let's get another one.
So this one's from Craig. I tried to watch Deadwater Fell on Channel 4 on demand.
Oh dear.
Partly because part of it was filmed where I live. I watched the previous week with AD at 9 p.m. However, I was unable to find AD on demand. So I emailed and telephoned Channel 4. Eventually, I got a reply. AD is not available on demand as it would have with a different system. I don't care. Subtitles are available, so why should I be treated as a second-class citizen? There was also the other issue with Star Trek Picard. Ah, yes, of course. After inquiries with Amazon, they didn't care either. I've attended the cinema recently for the first time in 14 years. The experience was good, and I would return. No doubt that there is a possibility that when the film moves to another platform, AD might disappear again. My rant is now finished, but will probably do no good. That's from Craig and Merlin the Guide Dog, who, Craig writes, definitely doesn't like the cinema.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fair enough. Yes, this is a difficult one. So I want to piece this together a bit in my own head. Deadwater Fell's on Channel 4, right?
Yes.
And he's already been able to watch the previous episode.
So he's watched it live. One. Yeah, he watched it with audio description when it was on at 9 o'clock.
Right.
And now that was the previous week. He's tried to watch this week on demand. No AD on that one.
Yeah. And does it not depend on what you're watching it on? Because I know that the iPhone, and I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on this, but I think the Android app will have had updates to include audio description as well. He says, hopefully.
Mm. Yeah, but we don't know whether it's a glitch, because we're going to get onto Picard in a second, but or whether it's that they're not going to bring the AD to the on-demand version, because that often can happen as well. Even if an app supports AD on its programming, which not all of them do, there is still sometimes a bit of a, you know, left-hand, right-hand thing, and the AD drops off from the live version to when it becomes available on demand. So it's messy.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? This is a very tricky area, this one, because, you know, I know myself, the experience of getting audio description on demand is very patchy. I know because I complain about it all the time. I think people are sick of me talking about it, but I'll continue to talk about it until it's fixed. And of course, let's not even begin on Star Trek Picard, Robin. I mean, you know, that. How many weeks in are we now, and that's still not audio described here?
I don't know, several.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even want to, I don't even care about this program, but I want to watch it because I can't. That's the position I'm in. I'm like, actually, do you know what? I am so annoyed about this. I actually just now want to watch it. I know nothing about Star Trek. I know there's a blind guy in it, and I know there's a guy who's got funny ears, and that's about all I can tell you about it.
Maybe it's CBS All Access, and by the way, All Access is a terrible name for a company that doesn't provide audio description for everyone to be able to access it.
Well, in fairness to them, they do now. This is the thing. So yeah, the track is available in the States. But remember that the show is on Amazon Prime over here. It's not on... we don't have CBS here. So
unless they have to redo the audio description, though, they're going to CBS for saying, give us the audio description so that, you know, when we've got it on our platform, then it'll be available as well. But maybe it's their cunning plan. Maybe it's reverse psychology. So that they will get, I mean, it's bad PR, obviously.
Sorry, maybe, they're gonna what's the cunning plan?
Pent up excitement for it or frustration because you want to watch it now.
Yeah.
Just because it hasn't got it. Yeah.
Is this like when the new Sony PlayStation's launched and they're telling us that, you know, it'll be out on the 19th of December and then, you know, they tell us that, you know, a container ship has sank in the sea somewhere. And it's like, oh, well, all the PlayStations have sank. Oh, well, what a shame. And then it hypes up. And then I think that's a bit of a strange approach, if I'm honest. I don't think that's going to work for this particular one. Because, you know what, I'll just move on and not bother with it. And in fact, if anything, I'd be more likely to cancel the subscription to whatever network isn't providing me with the content I want. And unfortunately, that's the only way we're ever going to get the point across. Are there enough of us to do that? I don't know. Okay, well, look, I could rant about AD all day. I'm not going to. We're going to talk now about the Blind Shell mobile phone, Robin. I know you're very keen for me to tell you about this, aren't you?
I'm excited. Yeah, it does sound good from what I know, but let's, see it in action.
Okay, so here I am then with the Blind Shell Classic mobile phone. This is so reminiscent of my very first phone, the Nokia 3310. It is a very small phone, fits neatly in the palm of your hand. And visually, it's half of it's a screen, half of it's a keyboard, right? So the bottom half is a keyboard with the numbers 1 to 9 and some menu buttons. And that's it in terms of the buttons. On the back, you'll feel a little camera. But this is a very simple phone. If you don't want the hassle of a touchscreen and you just want to call people or text people or even email, this is ideal. Yes, even does email. Well, let's talk you through it. And first off, let's turn it on. The power button is just above the number 3 on the keyboard. The number 5 has got a little nipple on it. It's not the most distinct, but you will be able to find it, hopefully. Number 3, just above that, is the power button. And that's very similar to the old Nokia phones as well. So if I just hold that in, I'll get a nice tune. Ah, that's nice.
Call 1 of 9.
That's it speaking as it does right off the bat. You don't have to turn anything on. You don't have to press anything. Speech is enabled from the beginning. It's the default setting. Now, on the phone, just between the hang-up button and the call button, which are located above the 1 and the 3, above the 1 is to answer a call, above the number 3 is to end a call, you'll find a little square, and in between the square, in the middle of the square, is another button. The outer square, if you like, that is your navigation. So you can go left and right and up and down using that square. So I'm going to go right and talk you through the menu.
Messages, 2 of 9.
Okay, so to get into messages, I can use the select button in the middle of the square if I want to, but I'll continue on just now.
Contacts, 3 of 9.
Okay, that's my contacts.
More applications, 4 of 9.
Oh, more applications. Let's go in there. So if I press the select button.
Tools, 1 of 4.
Tools. Okay, what's that do? Let's go in.
Alarm, 1 of 9.
Okay, it's got an alarm.
Minute timer, 2 of 9.
I'm using the right key here, so I'm just moving along. So minute timer, that's good.
Stopwatch, 3 of 9.
Handy.
Calendar, 4 of 9.
Calendar.
Notes, 5 of 9.
Notes.
Voice recorder, 6 of 9.
Oh, lovely. Built-in voice recorder as well.
Calculator, 7 of 9.
Helpful.
Weather, 8 of 9.
Weather.
Dictionary, 9 of 9.
Dictionary.
Alarm, 1 of 9.
Okay, so back to alarm. Wow, that's a lot already, isn't it? So tons of tools in there, but that's not all. So I'm going to use the hang-up button to sort of dump back a level.
Tools, 1 of 4.
And I'm going to go right again.
Email, 2 of 4.
Email.
Media, 3 of 4.
Media. So there are options in here as well. Let's go in and see what there is. So again, pressing that select button in the middle of the phone.
Music player, 1 of 6.
So I could put my MP3s on here, listen to music.
Internet radio, 2 of 6.
Brilliant. You could listen to RNIB Connect Radio. Great idea.
FM radio, 3 of 6.
If you're in Glasgow, you can listen to RNIB Connect Radio on 101 FM.
Book reader, 4 of 6.
Oh, that's handy. So you can even put your talking books on this as well.
Camera, 5 of 6.
And you can take pictures with the camera at the back of the phone.
Images, 6 of 6.
That's where you would look at the images you've taken with your camera.
Music player, 1 of 6.
And we're back to music player again. Okay, so let's go back one stage. Let's jump back one level. And that's with the hang-up button. Just press it once.
Media, 3 of 4.
And let's go right again and see what else we've got in here.
Vision aids, 4 of 4.
And now this is a phone for blind people, so it has got built-in vision aids. Let's have a look at those. I'll press the middle select button again.
Colour indicator, 1 of 3.
Brilliant. You can find out what colour that sock is and make sure it matches the other one.
Localization, 2 of 3.
So it's going to be able to tell me where I am in the world as well if I get lost.
Object tagging, 3 of 3.
Now this is useful. It does involve buying some other bits and pieces for it, but essentially you can have little labels around the house and you can use the phone to scan the tag and then apply a title to that tag using your voice. A bit like the Pen Friend, built into a phone. Brilliant. What else?
Colour indicator, 1 of 3.
Okay, so we're back to colour indicator again. Now let's jump back a level.
Vision aids, 4 of 4.
And let's go right.
Tools, 1 of 4.
Back to tools.
Email, 2 of 4.
Email. Okay, so we're getting the idea. I'm just moving around the phone using the right and the select button. I can go up as well for some more options.
7:56 a.m. Friday, February 7th, 2020, 1 of 5.
So that's when I've recorded this review at 7:56 a.m. Yes, I know, I got up early for you, you know. Right, let's go right on this and see what else there is.
Wi-Fi state, not connected, 2 of 5.
And yes, you can connect to your Wi-Fi, so it means even at home you don't have to use your cellular network to do emails or anything like that.
Signal strength, 100% 4G. Carrier, O2 UK. Mobile data enabled, 3 of 5.
So that's telling me I've got a fantastic 4G signal because this is a 4G phone.
Battery state, 28%, 4 of 5.
Announces the battery level.
Bluetooth disabled, 5 of 5.
Yes, you can pair Bluetooth as well.
7:57 a.m. Friday, February 7th, 2020, 1 of 5.
And there you go. So let's just try and make a call, because that's ultimately what this phone's all about, isn't it? So let's go back a level.
Email, 2 of 4.
So I've gone back to email, and I'm just going to go round and look for calls.
Media, 3 of 4. Vision aids, tools, 1 of email, 2 of media, 3 of 4.
Now, what I've realised here is I'm in a level that clearly doesn't have calls, which means I must be up one of the levels. So I'm going to come back down one by pressing the hang-up button.
More applications, 4 of 9.
Okay, I'm going to now turn right on this.
Settings, 5 of 9. More applications, 4 of 9.
Okay, I'm now going to move right.
Settings, 5 of 9.
Okay, lots of settings in there.
Status information, 6 of 9. Manual, 7 of 9.
If you get stuck, there's a manual.
No notifications, 8 of 9.
Okay.
Turn off the phone, 9 of 9.
Handy feature.
Call, 1 of 9.
Okay, call. So there we go, I'm into the call, and again, I just press the right button in the middle.
Dial contact, 1 of 4.
So if I have a contact in here I want to dial, nice and easy, I'll select, choose the contact, and again, press the select button. I'm only using two buttons to navigate this whole phone.
Dial number, 2 of 4.
If I know the number I want to call, I can dial the number using the keypad, which, again, real buttons, not a touchscreen.
Call history, 3 of 4.
That's handy because sometimes you maybe want to just go back to a number you've already dialed and maybe you can't remember the number the second time round.
Block numbers, 4 of 4.
For those PPI calls.
Dial contact, 1 of 4.
And there you go. The one I love about this is if I come back out of calls by just jumping down a level by pressing the hang-up button, again above the number 3.
Call, 1 of 9.
I can go left here.
Turn off the phone, 9 of 9.
And I can turn off the phone by pressing the middle button.
Do you want to turn off the phone?
It's making sure I do, so yes, I'll press that button again.
The phone is now off.
And that is it. That is the Blind Shell Classic. It is as simple as that. What a wonderful little phone. Everything spoken. I don't know what you can't like about that phone. And, you know, even just doing this demonstration makes me think, why am I not using this phone as my main phone? Because it is so easy. I'll be interested to know what you think.
Really? You want to use that as your main phone? Okay, update, update. Are you going to really do that?
Well, I do. I really like the phone. I love the fact it's got physical buttons. I think if I'm honest, if this kind of technology was inside a phone, as in this basic phone was inside a phone with an actual QWERTY keyboard as opposed to the T9 keyboard, I might be tempted, Robin, because I've got to be honest, when I had my old BlackBerry, ye old BlackBerry in the good old days, I loved that phone because I loved the tactile keyboard on it. It just wasn't very accessible. Thankfully, I had a bit more vision then, so it didn't bother me so much. But yeah, I like this phone. I like it. Get off my back. Get off my case about it. It's good. You should try this.
But tell me though, so text input, what's that experience like?
Well, it's interesting you ask, because I was talking to someone just a couple of hours back before we did the review, and I'll be honest with you, I thought it was there was a feature that was supposed to be in the phone that has not yet materialized. It did appear in an earlier version of the phone, and that is dictation. Or, you know, voice input, essentially, to dictate in messages. That was there in the original version of the Blind Shell mobile phone. It's not available now. So the only option for text input is the T9 keyboard, which, once you get into the flow of it again, it's been a while since I've used a keyboard like that, well, you can probably pick up speed not too badly. And, of course, everything is read out. Is this something you would use every day as your main phone? I think if you do use this, you're probably someone who's not needing to worry too much about responding to emails in a hurry. You know, you'll get there eventually. It's probably not going to be, you know, you're not going to be writing War and Peace in an email, you know. It's going to be a short couple of lines. I do like some of the features in it. It's okay. I mean, the colour indicator is quite nice. You've got a voice recorder in there. You've got lots of useful things, and I'm sure they're going to add more to it. In fact, just recently, they added YouTube to it as well. So you can watch and listen to YouTube videos, and it's a much more accessible way of doing it because everything's within the same interface, which I really like. So it kind of goes into that category of synaptic, in your pocket, that kind of idea, with a few more things bolted on. And I think if the services on the phone develop, like, for example, if you can get your RNIB talking books directly downloaded to it, or you can get your newspapers downloaded to listen to, or you know, that could make this really interesting as a device. It would give you a lot more capability because it's like in your pocket with a keyboard then, you know.
Great. So how would you get music, for example, onto the phone, and how would you get your photos off?
Well, it's the old-fashioned way of getting a cable, plugging in. It's a micro USB cable to USB. You got to plug it into your computer, and you transfer files across using a little SD card that's built into the phone, or actually is connected into the phone. You can add more if you want. So you've got storage capability on there. So it's kind of old-fashioned, and I like that as well, because it's the old, you know, drag-and-drop, copy-paste approach, rather than you know, going through applications to do it. You don't need any applications on your computer. It's just simple file explorer on your PC, and that's it. Job done. So, you know, it's simple. It is a simple phone. But I sometimes think simple's good, you know?
I actually think this is really good because, yes, it's simple. You demonstrated it really well there, how easy it is to get around.
Two buttons.
But there's actually a lot in there as well.
Yeah.
There's actually a lot in there, which I think makes it really, you know, a really viable option. And cost?
Well, it's going to cost you just under £300, Robin. So, you know, I'm saying earlier today, you know, well, it's maybe a good one for the beach. I guess how much money you've got to spend at the beach. You may not have enough left for ice cream.
I too.
Yeah, it is a considered purchase, I think, at that price, because, you know, you compare that to something like a Pixel 3A, which is £400, or the upcoming iPhone SE2 / iPhone 9, which is going to be in this £349, £400 mark. You know, you could get a lot more for your money, arguably. But again, this is about choice. If you don't want
different
that...
Different products, different people.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you might not want the... Like I said earlier, you know, you don't want the touchscreen. You don't want all that stuff. You just want a phone, and you get those added benefits as well, nice and easily. Then, you know, that's what you're going to get. Blindshell.com, go there, and you can find out all about it. So, yeah, nice little device, isn't it? I'm kind of keen. I mean, Andy, I know this is obviously aimed primarily at blind people,
yes,
but, you know, these kind of phones, do they still appeal to you?
No, not as much. No, I can see the benefits for people who are partially sighted. But this is the kind of phone that I would maybe go for as an emergency. It looks a lot like the phone I had when I had to send my phone off to get fixed. And I had an emergency phone that was about 20 years old.
But Nokia relatively recently released the 3310, didn't they?
There's definitely
a market for it.
What was the other one? 3270 or something? There was another, remember the banana phone?
Oh, yeah.
That was my first phone. That was my very first phone, was the banana phone from The Matrix. And I loved it. And what was hilarious about it was it didn't even have the capability to do text messages. That's how old it was. Yeah. Figure that one out, kids. No text messages.
Mine was a flip phone Alcatel back in the day.
Alcatel.
Well, there's a big market for retro phones right now because obviously Motorola are redoing the Razr brand as well.
Yes, they are. And actually, do you know something? That's not a bad one to mention because... I mean, I think cost-wise, it's going to be in the £700 mark.
It is extortionately expensive.
It's ridiculously expensive for what it is.
It looks a nice bit of kit, but very, very pricey.
Well, I got my hands on it at CES, and what I liked about it was that it's got a folding screen, Robin. So, you know, this is a very old design where you had the old flip phone, but this one has got a full Android screen on it. But it flips open to achieve that, right? So you've got a full-size screen, which you can fold in half. And what was interesting to me was I really wanted to know, could I feel the join? And you just couldn't. There was no join visible on it at all, or at least none I could feel, which is pretty remarkable for the design. So it's coming out not long, actually, I think. It was in the news. February, March?
Yeah, it was in the news this morning because they're finding that the fold may fail after 12 months. Some of the news articles were saying that it could break after 27,000 folds.
Oh, well, that's just terrible.
Terrible, isn't it? Yes, the Motorola Razr.
Is that like when they tell you that your light bulbs will go out after 15,000 hours and you're sort of in your head trying to work out what that means?
You stand by the light switch, turning it on and off to see if it happens.
That's another hour gone. No, I like the sound of the Motorola Razr, and I do. I did like the style. You don't sound enthused at all. Is it because it's Android, Robin?
It's early days, I think, with foldable phones. But interestingly enough, this week, or it might have even been a little bit before then, Apple put out a patent for their version of what a foldable screen would look like. And it sounds from the description that the screen would be made of something much more durable. And when you close the phone, there's actually there's internal space opened up within the phone. It's got a clever hinge mechanism so that the crease isn't sharp. It's allowed to have quite a lot of room to kind of a big radius of the fold, but you don't know it because it's closed. And when you open it, there's a clever sliding thing inside that actually slides two things across so that when you touch that middle part of the screen that had quite a lot of gape inside it when it was shut, is now supported from behind with hard, you know, surfaces so that when you tap on it, it doesn't kind of bounce or anything. So I think that actually is the answer. Anything that has got a very tight radius fold is either going to be a very flimsy material, or it's going to get a crease, or as Andy says, you know, it's going to fail after a while. And we certainly saw that with the Galaxy and the Razr preview models that people have seen. They say that they can feel something in the middle there.
I'm not saying you can't feel it. You can feel something. It's a little ridge, but it's not a clean line. It's not as obvious as you might think it is.
These just feel like 1.0 devices to me.
I think the future
probably will include foldable phones. Definitely.
Everything's getting smaller again. It's going back the way. Remember, we started off with huge phones, then we got tiny phones. Now we get huge phones again. Now we're going back to small phones, and on it goes. Okay, well, look, let's leave it there. We're going to come back with more emails, and we've got more discussion to be had with the news. In fact, let's do the news now, shall we? Let's do the news.
News from the internet.
Yes, news from the internet. And I think we'll kick off with Facebook, shall we? Because Facebook are in the news because it's their birthday. Are you excited about this, Robin?
I have got a Facebook account. I haven't opened it.
That wasn't the question.
I'm not excited, Nick.
Right, well, let's find out more about this. John Hargill has been reviewing 16 years of Facebook for us.
The 4th of January marked the 16th year of the existence of Facebook, a date which would functionally change the world forever. Created by tech mogul Mark Zuckerberg, alongside fellow Harvard University students Eduardo Saverin, Andrew McCollum, Dustin Moskovitz, and Chris Hughes, Facebook changed the way modern society views social networking. Within 24 hours, the platform saw signups of 1,200 Harvard students, and within 1 month, half of the undergraduate population had followed suit. The initial site was limited to American college students, which, in 2005, was extended to US high schools, and eventually international students within the same year. The real game changer for Facebook came in September 2006, when the network became available to anyone with a registered email. Early Facebook was generally basic, with access to your own personal Facebook wall, where friends could leave messages only viewable to someone specifically visiting your own personal profile. Status updates were kept separate and posted as a Your Name Is feature, where users would let friends know what they were doing or looking forward to. These features were eventually replaced by a timeline in 2011. The early version of the site would also encourage people to send virtual gifts to their friends, and also had a poke feature, which was originally launched to compete with Snapchat. The feature, though still on the platform, has widely fallen out of use. Notable developments since Facebook's early days include the launch of Facebook for iPhone in July 2008, the introduction of the like button in February 2009, and the integration of video calling in July 2011. The company also has made many acquisitions over the years, including Instagram in 2012, WhatsApp and Oculus in 2014, which, in part, has contributed to its approximate $630 billion value. Facebook also has some new developments coming into action this year for its approximate 2.5 billion monthly users. Ads with click-through links that will take a user through to Messenger to talk directly to a brand will be introduced to the platform, allowing an easier way for brands to speak with their customers. They are also putting more emphasis on transparency for users, helping those who use the site to understand the algorithms and how best to take control of the way a feed is ranked and whose posts will be viewable. The algorithm will also be changing, giving the site an ability to recognize low-quality content and limiting how many ads can be ran at once, creating a more personal and less brand-focused timeline. Facebook has also changed the way we view social networking over the last 16 years, becoming a daily part of many people's lives and has, in many ways, shaped the world we live in. As Facebook grows and develops, will it also shape the world of the future? Only time will tell.
Well, there you go. I mean, Facebook has changed a lot of things, Robin. I know you might not be a huge fan or at least a huge user of it, but it clearly
Nobody can deny the impact that it's had. It has. I mean, it's almost solely responsible for the growth of social media. I mean, there were things like MySpace and stuff before and
Bebo.
Friends Reunited, but no, absolutely. But I think they were really clever to purchase Instagram and WhatsApp, because Facebook, as a platform in itself, I think is going to struggle to retain its popularity. We've got 2.5 billion users, but they are aging and the young'uns aren't coming in at the bottom. My children, none of their friends use Facebook. You know, it's passe. So unless it revitalizes and renews itself, you know, reinvents itself, I think they're going to be looking at other properties to kind of carry the torch forward.
It still feels very young to me as a company. I don't know if that's an age thing.
It totally is. Zuckerberg's only 36 or something.
Well, that's right.
They developed it in their student days. Yeah, as we just heard there. So,
but when you hear kids talk about it as some kind of old dinosaur that you know we're all clinging on to, you know, I get a bit. What? Really? What are you on? You know, and they're just telling me things I have no idea what they're talking about anymore because they
TikTok
talk about
TikTok is the current hotness.
That's the new one, isn't it? Yeah, I actually thought it was a dance because someone had told me it was a video that had come up from a neighbour of mine. I was asking the neighbour. I said, "Oh, so your kids are into this dancing, are they?" And she's saying, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, the dance they did on the video," and she said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "Is that TikTok? Is it?" And yeah, at that point the conversation fell sour because she realised I was an idiot. And that was the end of that, frankly. So now I know it's a social network. I don't understand what it is. Maybe someone can explain it. Andy, you're the youngest one here.
Oh, thanks.
What's TikTok?
Wait,
I know what TikTok
remember,
is. But I don't...
Yeah, it's very close, aren't they?
Is that
yeah.
a social network?
Do you remember Vine?
Yep.
Yes, so six-second videos second or something. Looping.
They're very similar. I'm not sure entirely if TikTok has a limit like it does, but they're shareable videos. Pretty much. It's not something that you, I, or Robin need to worry about. Let the youth deal with it.
Are you saying that this is for people who are young and not us?
Young and hip.
Right, oh, definitely.
With eyes.
Yeah, definitely.
That's us out of the equation.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now you've picked up a story this week, Robin, that you were wanting to share.
Yeah, so Nissan have an electric car, the Leaf. I'm sure we all know about it.
Yes.
This is a story about driverless vehicles, the rise of autonomous cars. They're coming, guys. And this week, gone, Nissan Leaf, an EV electric vehicle, which was kitted out with all of the lasers and LiDAR and radars and things to make it have full driving, autonomous driving capabilities, underwent the longest UK-based fully autonomous route. They went from their technical centre, Nissan's technical centre in Cranfield in Bedfordshire, up to their manufacturing plant in Sunderland, I think it was. And it was 230 miles and it went the whole way fully autonomously. The story says that there were people on board, and they did very briefly take over four times to recharge at petrol stations. So the actual kind of coming off the motorway and, you know, docking next to the supercharging stations or whatever was human driven. But if they hadn't had to do that, then they would have been on the motorway and they didn't touch the steering wheel or anything for 230 miles, which I think is amazing. So if anyone thinks that we're still a way off level five, which is the full autonomous capability, then I really do think that we need to kind of think again. The only real barrier in the years to come is the legislation, I think, because there was no way they could have mapped that route in a way that would be very different from, you know, taking any route in the UK. I don't think there was anything special about the preparation they did for this one. They were just relying on the sensors as they were going along to, you know, fully autonomously drive this car. And I'm super excited by that. You can't argue with 230 miles, can you? That's brilliant.
No, you can't. And I think 5G is going to give us the power that these vehicles need to communicate with each other. That's going to be the next stage. Then, of course, you build into all of that the GPS capability. So, you know, these cars are going to have a lot of backup on the move. Yes, they will use their own sensors primarily, and they need to, because, of course, the infrastructure that would need to change and be rebuilt to accommodate these vehicles if they purely relied on the roads and technology in the roads, it would be so costly. It would probably never happen in this country. I mean, we can't even get a railway right, you know. So, you know, what's the chances of getting this right? So these cars have to rely on sensors first, and it obviously works.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd be interested to know what the power output of that was, or consumption, because I read somewhere that, you know, the almost supercomputer scale computing power that they've got in the boot of these autonomous vehicles consumes 750 watts, which is a lot of power. So for these to be the greener version, which is obviously where we're going with EVs, low carbon, etc., you know, they would need to be more efficient and also to bring the price down, because, you know, it sounds like there's a lot of hardware involved still, but that definitely will happen. Tesla have level four capabilities in their Model 3, and they're coming in at $30,000.
Wow.
Which hopefully will translate to less in pounds over here. But yeah, so, and that has a lot of that capability, if not all of it, just not switched on yet. So it will become commoditized, it will become affordable. And I think this week's story shows us that it's technologically ready, and it's just a question of how long it's going to be before it actually happens.
Wow. It is incredible when you think about it. Okay, well, let's leave the news for now, because I want to move on to Ask Tech Talk. And this week, we've got a question in from a listener in Northern Ireland.
Hello, says Darren. I was wondering which TVs have got voice guide on to actually read out the electronic program guide. It would be grateful if you could let me know. Thanks, from Darren in Northern Ireland.
Well, we put that question to the Technology for Life team. Here is the response, Darren.
Hi, this is Mark from the Technology for Life team at RNIB. We received a question in regard to talking electronic programme guides on televisions via Ask Tech Talk on Connect Radio. The great news is that a lot of the major TV manufacturers have added this functionality to their more recent televisions. For instance, Samsung, Philips, LG, and Sony have all added this functionality, but it just has different names. And sometimes you do need to dig into the accessibility settings on the television to find the functionality. To give you an idea of what a talking program guide can do for you, I'm going to read a bit of information that came from Samsung. They call their talking program guide Voice Guide. So here we go. Voice Guide enables the television to read on-screen text back to you and provides verbal feedback about the selected volume, current channel, and program information. It also reads aloud all the text displayed in the electronic program guide. Voice Guide works for every menu on the TV. You can also adjust the pitch and tone of Voice Guide to suit your preferences. Samsung also added some information about other accessibility options they have included in some of their bigger televisions. Other manufacturers, such as Sony and Philips, have Android televisions. Android is a platform supplied by Google across a lot of different devices and has a screen reader in it called TalkBack. LG, on the other hand, have their own version of an audio guide, and they call theirs simply Audio Guidance. So there are a lot of televisions with electronic talking program guides available on the market today. They are usually the more modern ones, so you need to be looking for something that has been manufactured in the last 2 to 3 years. I hope you found this information useful, and you can find more information about technology on the RNIB Technology Hub at www.rnib.org.uk/technology. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Mark, for sharing the answer there. And lots of interesting advice in this, because there are so many TVs now that do have this. A lot more than a lot of people guess, Robin. That's the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can tell me, because I don't know anything about TVs. This only covers the EPG. And so the ability to record things is a different...
No, recording's fine. Often, especially on Samsung, and I have to say, and you're not allowed to pick favourites, but I pick a favourite. Samsung, I think, have done the best job at this. I think, and nothing wrong with Sony, nothing wrong with LG. These are good TVs, brilliant TVs, actually. I've always bought Sony. It's one of my favourite brands when it comes to TVs, but I think Samsung pipped the post when it comes to the operating system. I think they've put more into it in terms of time and energy, and I hope the other companies, you know, continue to do that. I've said this for years with companies. It's not that they're doing anything wrong, or it's not that I don't like it. It's just it's not quite as developed, which is true, because all these companies came to this later. Samsung kind of get in there first, and along with Panasonic, I should say, as well. But yeah, Samsung have done a great job with this, because not only is the EPG accessible, you can record programs on it. This, of course, you can do across all TVs. You'll be able to record. Bearing in mind, you will have to plug in some kind of hard drive to your computer, into your television to do that. So it's not as simple as, you know, you have to have an extra piece of kit to do that. But all of that's accessible. You're able to navigate the recordings, play them back. All that works on the Sony, LG, Samsung, Panasonic. But the one thing that Samsung does extra is the menu system, which sort of takes you into the entertainment area of the TV, which has got all the apps and all the fun stuff. All of that is accessible as well. All of that. And that's really important to know. So the caveat is that it's all accessible, except some of the apps aren't accessible. So you might go into one or two apps and you won't get any response at all. But for example, on Samsung TVs, Amazon and Netflix, and all the content there and built into that, that is accessible. So it's not 100%, but it's getting there. I will be honest though, Robin, it does feel like TV is really lagging behind in this area, bearing in mind where we are with phones and everything else.
Yeah, except that what we've got today compared to what we had, I don't know, even 5 years ago. But yeah, thanks for clearing that up. I told you I know nothing.
Well, yeah, yeah. You're such an optimist, you aren't you? You're such an optimist. But you're right. You know, it is better than where we were. It would be nice to be further forward. It is 2020, for goodness sake. 8K televisions are out. Yeah. And we can't have one that's accessible to blind people. It just seems a bit mad, or at least fully accessible, let's be fair. And don't get me started on the satellite providers. Okay, let's leave that, because we're always looking for your questions, and we do thank you, Darren, for getting in touch with yours. If you would like to get in touch, Andy's going to tell us how to do that.
Yeah, if you have a question, no matter how big or how small, there are various ways that you can get your answers. You can ask the Technology for Life team at RNIB by calling the helpline 0303 123 9999. You can bother Stephen, Robin and myself via social media, so you can use the hashtag AskTechTalk, or you can email us at techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Yeah, and you can find me at TechTalkerSteve, and you can find him, Robin, what's yours again?
At USA number 2. Day, don't ask.
Yeah, I wasn't going to.
Nobody covered that last week.
We did cover this last week. Yes, yeah, I still don't understand it. Right, back to the emails.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day.
Right, let's get back into it then, Andy.
Here's your mail today.
We're going right back to where we left off, I'm afraid. AD.
Oh,
this one's from Graham. Hi. On the 4th of February, Tech Talk, which was last week, you and Robin were talking about AD of a Star Trek video being unavailable in the UK, but being available in Canada, as well as some other countries, on Amazon Prime Video. However, I have been harassing Amazon for over a year because there is absolutely no audio description available on Amazon Prime Video in Canada. After listening to your program, I called them and asked if AD was now available here, and they said, no, it is not. So I don't know where Robin got his information from, but it seems to be incorrect.
Well, let's just clarify here, because this is an interesting one, right? Because what we were talking about last week, Graham, was that Star Trek Picard, which is on Amazon Prime here, doesn't have audio description. Star Trek Picard does have audio description in Canada, but that's because it's
CTV.
Not on Amazon Prime. It's on CTV Sci-Fi, which is a different channel. In the US, it's available on CBS All Access, and it is audio described there. And it's on I don't know what network in Australia, but it has audio description there as well. So, the problem here is the networks don't seem to be sharing this around, and that's the problem. So, you're right. Amazon Prime may not have audio description in Canada, but it most certainly does have audio description here in the UK, just not on as much of the content as it does in America. It's just so confusing, Robin, isn't it?
Yeah, and sorry if I didn't make that clear last time. I mean, I'm confused as well.
I think we were all still figuring out where everything lived. You know, that's a problem. It was all over the place last week.
Yeah.
But, it's a difficult topic. It really is. It drives me insane. Hopefully that's clarified that for you, Graham. And
he continues.
Happy hunting. Oh, okay.
There's more to this, because he goes on to say that if you do have an issue with Amazon, you can always write to jeff@amazon.com. Jeff being Jeff Bezos, obviously. And he will pass your email on to the respective department for them to deal with. I'm not sure if Jeff does it himself. He might have an assistant to do it.
He's never off his phone.
Yes, he's so you'd be able to catch him that way. He also goes on to say, you may be interested to know that all the major TV networks in Canada are mandated to provide audio description on TV between the hours of 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. every day. And that's great, because although we get a lot of US programs, they're not described on the US networks, but we do get them fully described on the Canadian ones.
Well, there you go.
That's brilliant.
That is brilliant. And that's the same kind of law we have here. The problem is that that does not translate to on demand yet in the UK anyway. Law coming soon, unless, of course, it's all revoked because of Brexit. Who knows what the future holds, what joy awaits. Right, let's get another email, Andy.
So this one's from Aaron. Stephen, Robin and Andy, I hope this week has found you well. First off, let me say I enjoy the show every week.
Excellent.
Second, I was born with ROP, retinopathy of prematurity. I lost my left eye due to doctor neglect, and my right eye was where the ROP was in. For people who don't know about ROP, there are 5 stages. Within these 5 stages, the eyes affected can be stable, but become unstable at any point. I was told by my ophthalmologist that the eye could become unstable at any point. My school for the blind in the United States would not teach me Braille. They say that I could see, so why bother? My mother and I pushed for Braille, and the school reluctantly agreed. They only taught me up to grade 2, so I've had to do some learning of other symbols on my own. I'm currently working on UEB and loving it. Stephen, do you want to clarify what UEB is?
Unified English Braille is the new standard for Braille, as opposed to SEB, which is Standard English Braille.
He goes on to say, third, on the February the 4th of 2017, 4 years ago, something happened that changed my life forever. I used magnification and could see pretty well as a kid up until that day. I learned cane travel, but used what vision I had. I fortunately never got headaches or eye strain. However, learning Braille opened up doors for me. Anyways, I lost a significant amount of vision on February the 4th. I knew Jaws enough to get by, but not enough to give up magnification. I was in denial for a few months, but knew that I needed to quickly change. I now have cataracts, glaucoma, and retina scarring in my right eye. The vision I did have is no longer there, and everything is fuzzy. I barely can see anything, and what I used to, I can't. I'm not sad, depressed, or in denial anymore. Technology has helped, but it's also being prepared also helps. I'm constantly learning new ways of doing things from your show.
Well,
yay.
Yeah, that's what it's about, Aaron, isn't it? Yeah, I'm sorry you've had to go through all that in your life. It's just horrific. And I know that my wife, who listens regularly to my dulcet tones here, but I think she prefers Robin. She,
no accounting for taste.
Well, she knows exactly how you're going through with this because it's exactly the same condition she has. Mm. And, you know, it's that sudden change. And sometimes it's that sudden change that makes you do things. It was only when my sight got worse that I decided to make the leap into these areas. I mean, for a start, there was no choice anymore, especially with Jaws. There was just no way I would be able to function in employment without it. Braille, at this age, could be seen as an optional extra. I don't think it is. I just wish I'd, like you, learned it when I was younger. And I wish that it hadn't been optional for me at the time. I wish it was mandated, as it is for blind children, completely blind children. So, yeah, I mean, this is a topic that we did discuss last week. And, you know, it really irks me, Robin, when I hear people talk about it in that way. Because to me, it's always the same. It's sighted people giving their view on us blind people and what we should be doing. And, you know, I think blind people know best. And, you know, we need to listen to more blind people. It's as simple as that, really. Anyway, look, that's our time up for today. Thank you so much for taking part, Robin, and Andy as well. Thank you for reading out those emails. And thank you for sending them in, because we really appreciate them. If you want to send in emails, continue the conversation. Please do. We'll be right back here at the same time next week on air and on the podcast to continue the chat. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Find us on Twitter as well. Hit us up there. And we'll catch you again next time. Robin, thank you. Andy, thank you.
Thanks, Bo. Thanks, everyone.